I don't think I've ever seen a multifamily deal marketed without saying the words, it's a value add deal. That doesn't work in today's market. Not with your lenders, not with your partners, right? You can say, hey, I'll put gold plated everything in here. You're not going to get a dollar more of rent, right? We're on kind of the opposite side of that right now. In seeing kind of all of the competition in that, in the value add multifamily space, we made a pivot as really a sidecar business, not even really a line of business, buying some extended stay hotels just for a stupid cheap price. In the hotel world, it's price per key. But it's in the extended stay world, it's actually pretty easy to convert it over to what we would call a door in the multifamily world.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com. Today on the show, I had the pleasure of chatting with Elon Gordon. Now, Elon has spent 20 years as an acquisition and asset manager specialist, acquiring over $2.8 billion of commercial real estate. Elon has a reputation as a reliable investment analyst, able to quickly aggregate information into relevant decision-making investment metrics, and he's a proven meticulous attention to detail, identifying really untapped value, driving and increasing cash flow and maximizing those profits. Now, during his short time in Texas, he has closed over $750 million of value-add multifamily acquisitions. And in recent market opportunities, he's really pushed to grow the hotel to multifamily conversion portfolio, as it, again, it's a very unique asset with understanding the entitlements behind it and the physical upgrades needed. So he has built a massive portfolio of that hotel conversion to multifamily. I'm really pumped and excited to have him on the show today to share his incredible knowledge and insight about all things related to commercial real estate and what we're seeing in today's market. But enough out of me. Let's get him out of here. G'day, Elon. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today, mate?
Howdy. Very good. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Mate, thanks for being on. And we were just talking a little bit in the green room about some deals that you've done that I've stumbled across. I want to save those nuggets for later. But, you know, to kick the show off, can you rewind the clock and tell me how you made your first ever dollar as a kid?
Yeah, I've always been entrepreneurial myself. I have pretty distinct memories of pushing my own lawnmower up and down the block to the neighbor's yards. I don't know, $10, $15 a yard, you know, once or twice a month, kind of building that up, but quite literally putting leaflets in people's mailbox slots or mailboxes and kind of going down that route. But it was always kind of small little things. If Reid, you might remember the days of burning CDs and kind of putting together mixes like that.
Hell,
so there
yeah.
Was, you know, I was always that kind of computer geek that, you know, put together something, whether it's for fun or, you know, to turn a dollar, which quite literally was, I think you'd make $1 per CD, something to that effect. But always kind of looking for those type of things. I mean, that was kind of in high school when kind of things, you know, really picked up, and it was all small dollars, but it was much more about, you know, that experience and having that. Now I like to call it beer money. It couldn't be called beer money back then, but I liked having those extra dollars and, you know, could go kind of get something on my own without having to ask my folks for permission on this or that. So it's always been kind of, you know, ramping up, and I've always kind of had my eyes on the kind of business world, and it kind of came to fruition in college to be in the real estate world. That kind of dove in through my connections in college at UPenn, and got into the real estate department there and then kind of real estate developers in Philadelphia, and just kind of went from there. Been doing real estate since college.
Funny you mentioned burning CDs. I remember like Napster would have been one that you would have been very familiar with back in the day.
Oh, sure.
LimeWire, was it another one?
LimeWire and Kazaa was one of those.
Yeah, and was it the pirateship.org or something?
Pirate Bay. Pirate Bay. Don't get it wrong.
Pirate Bay. Yeah, I remember all those things where you're downloading, ripping songs off the internet, ripping, you know, I remember being in college in Australia and ripping like, you know, latest episodes of the OC, right, in early 2000, you know, that, so, and using all the intrawebs and different people who are way smarter than me ripping that stuff off the internet. But that trip down memory lane, I remember burning CDs, everything from burning CDs to through to, you know, Napster and all that sort of stuff and LimeWire. But now let's get into the meat and potatoes of it. So you've spent the better, your career in real estate investments. Give us an overview. I mentioned $750 million. I've also mentioned hotel conversions. Give us an overview of like your transition or the journey over the last sort of 20 years and how you've seen that transition in today and how it relates to today's market and what you're identifying as great opportunities to buy in today's market, given how just how frothy it's been over the last 10 years or 20 years.
Looking at developments back then, it was, you know, you'd be looking at, you know, garment office buildings to convert those to condos, right? And you know, be looking at the bones of things like that, and you know, working for big names in New York City to kind of what could you do, and you would do you know, as that's just as an analyst, right, running numbers and you know, pulling due diligence and kind of gathering all of those things together. And we would even get into things like, well, if you're in the Tribeca neighborhood and you're zoned to those very good public schools, well, you could effectively add that tuition that you're not, that private school tuition that you're not paying into the price of the condo, right? Just kind of silly little value add things like that, that you kind of learned are nuances to kind of what goes on. And the same thing actually rings true even here in Austin, where I'm sitting right now, which is I'm actually, my office here is over here in Westlake with kind of, I think, you know, like the number one or two school district in the entire country. And so all the houses here are just extra expensive because you don't have to pay for private school, right? You can just send them to public and you'll be doing great. So, you know, looked at that world, you know, the crisis of the financial crisis in 08 had hit soon thereafter, kind of went into asset management mode and dealing with garden style apartments all over the country and kind of watching some of those go back to the lender, you know, trying to keep them out of foreclosure and, you know, writing down loans and things like that over time as an asset manager. I've really always been kind of in acquisitions. I kind of fell into, you know, asset management as kind of part of the downturn where kind of no one was really buying and you were just managing what you had. And then I made my move over to Texas probably about 10 years ago, where I kind of focused in on, I had a stint with a group looking at commercial, but I really kind of homed in on value add multifamily in Texas, which is, you know, very popular thing that really kind of a lot of people made a lot of money over the last 10 years or so in that space, right? So, you know, I don't think I've ever seen a multifamily deal marketed without saying the words, it's a value add deal. Kind of doesn't matter if someone had just finished doing all the renovations, right? There's always something you can add and push the rents. And I think, Reed, you'll probably see kind of that doesn't work in today's market. Not with your lenders, not with your partners, right? You can say, hey, I'll put gold plated everything in here. You're not going to get a dollar more of rent, right? We're on kind of the opposite side of that right now. And that speaks to what my group, Sheer Capital, has been seeing for the past, you know, 5 years, 6, 7 years, just, you know, kind of insane cap rates. You know, we actually sold a couple properties with a three handle cap rate on the exit in Austin, where we just exited garden style stuff. And you know, one of them I can say went to a group that's now belly up because they overpaid for it. And, you know, that's that kind of thing is working its way through the market these days. And as we've seen kind of, hey, if everybody is paying, you know, three caps and you know, building to a five cap at a best case scenario, somebody's going to lose here, right? And I don't want it to be me. So in seeing kind of all of the competition in that, in the value add multifamily space, we made a pivot kind of first as really a sidecar business, not even really a line of business, buying some extended stay hotels just for a stupid cheap price. In the hotel world, it's price per key, but it's in the extended stay world, it's actually pretty easy to convert it over to what we would call a door in the multifamily world. And so we had started with that in 2016. I mean, well before hotels were, you know, just on fire sale. But 20 came around, and we said, hey, you know, it's been a while since we kind of picked up a real good off-market value add deal with good upside. And we went in and said, hey, we can pick up hotels again for, you know, 25 cents on the dollar. And even when we convert and put in all that extra dollars in carry costs and in actual hard costs, we can still come out be all in for 75 cents on the dollar on a multifamily basis, right? And just have a good yield at the end of the day. And so we kind of advanced our platform from, number one, you know, buying hotels cheap. And again, saying that you'll exit as multifamily, nothing special about that, right? You can buy a high cap rate and sell at a low cap rate and make money. The secret sauce is in execution, right? So that's kind of what we have worked our way through, made a lot of mistakes along the way, but have come out the other end and really kind of know what that looks like and still seeing pain in the hospitality world, right? Which is happening all over the place, right? Similar to offices, you know, still not coming, kind of the best offices are doing well. The old offices are just dying. The same thing in hospitality, right? The new hospitality is doing pretty well. They get their traffic back. And old hotels, the ones that we focus on, 70s and 80s build, just are not getting that traffic back and are just hurting these days. So we've kind of pivoted ourselves saying, hey, we'd love to do value add deals, but there isn't much value to add if you actually go do it. And then, hey, everybody is gunning for those REO deals, right? Where the lender took it back. And so, you know, those are kind of getting bid up where, you know, kind of starts to not make sense anymore. So we've just kind of continued to lean in on these hotel conversions. There's, you know, all types of nuances that goes into that. But that's kind of where we still see distress in kind of those older vintage hotels that we can still identify good multifamily markets and go convert it. And that's kind of part of our solution to, number one, you know, we can kind of contribute to help the affordable housing crisis just by adding stock quicker to, you know, most big cities need just more affordable housing in general. And number two, to kind of have more deals that we're doing, right? That we're not just twiddling our thumbs waiting for interest rates to come down, right? In multifamily value add, right? You're really trying to kind of eke out some basis points in the yield doing that, those CapEx investments. You know, we're doing 250 and 350 basis point, you know, movements in the yield that we're trying to build to here. And that kind of still works in today's market for kind of the subsect of older hotels that we're looking at. And we can still kind of add real value to multifamily and, you know, still be able to do some deals here. And again, help out, you know, hotel owners that are struggling along the way.
Yeah, no, it's super interesting. We've taken a little look at some hotel conversions. I know Austin, I invest in Austin. I know the I-35 very, really, really, really well. It's one of the number one or two to Phoenix, you know, with all the golden children for the last 5 years, but also now the biggest rent decline that we've seen across the country. So have you mentioned earlier about like adding stock to good markets. Austin is a good market. I fundamentally believe it's going to be fine. But how are you going about finding deals in a market like Austin, or have you pivoted to other markets with growth to find those hotels to convert? Because, you know, let's call a spade, the hotel in the extended stay world, they're more micro units are on the smaller side. And is the average Joe renter wanting to really rent those type of units in today's world, given how much supply has been come online across the board? It's a long-winded question. There's a lot of complexities about that, but let's get to the heart of what the thesis is and how you're navigating those waters.
Austin, very good example of just kind of a lot of oversupply coming online, in, you know, through 24 and probably another year. We are absolutely seeing, you know, rents being suppressed and kind of waiting for the day where kind of they will come back and work again, right? We very specifically, you know, buy with a lot of wiggle room, right? And so where we would have loved to have made, you know, X or Y amount of profit, right? We're facing down kind of a lot less profit these days. And that's fine, right? But I think most importantly is, again, like you said, kind of fundamentally, if you work backwards from good markets, right, with good fundamentals, where those demands are there, kind of that demand is going to stay there. And so it's just about kind of getting that supply and demand right and kind of balanced over time, right? You will have your place in the market. And you're right, it is not one-to-one with traditional multifamily, right? It is very specifically a solution to rents just kind of growing too much too quickly in primary markets, right? Through COVID, tons and tons of people came to Austin. Good amount of them have now left to go back to New York or wherever they came from, right? But even still, with all the supply coming on, you know, brand new ground up stuff, and there's been, you know, good handful of hotel conversions, right? When you're looking at, you know, $1,500 studio rents, and we can come in and do $1,000 studio rents, that speaks to a certain type of renter. It is kind of that, you know, low end renter. You're thinking kind of service sector type jobs, whether, you know, they're grocery store checkout or waiters and waitresses. Those folks not only, you know, want a place to stay, need a place to stay where they can kind of close the door and lock the door behind them, right? And it has the bathroom and the kitchen. It's not a ton of space. These are micro units. You're exactly right. But that speaks to a certain type of renter, right? We talk a lot about, you know, workforce housing. Well, the workforce does also include that service sector kind of at the bottom of the income scale, right? And so if you can kind of adjust your offering to solve for that, even new developments going up are just on average less square feet than they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Well, we're kind of shortcutting that and just saying, hey, take a hotel room box that exists already and go deliver that. But it's got to be in the right market. So as a good example, Houston is just generally speaking a ton of supply, right? And, you know, you drive, you know, very, very spread out. And the rents there are reflective of people want space for cheap, right? And so, you know, delivering a 300 square foot hotel, former hotel room as a studio apartment, generally speaking, does not work for most parts of Houston, right? And in Austin, as an example, right? I think, you know, the downtown, the central areas of Austin, right? Those rents have just kind of gone crazy over the past 5 years. And so if you kind of work backwards from good multifamily markets where you can see that those kind of, you can undercut those rents, we kind of look at it that direction. And as you know, from being in the business, right, those rents as a general rule are pretty transparent, right? And not only that, but kind of upcoming supply and absorption, pretty transparent as well in the multifamily world, right? And so you can kind of, we hop around looking in all types of cities, right? We're sticking to primary cities where we can point to and say, hey, there's a lot of population here, a lot of population growth, and they need an affordable housing solution, right? They need to deliver X number of more units for their market. Well, we can do that in 1 year, not 3 to 5 years, mm-hmm. right? So at the very least, it's a stopgap, but I think you kind of provide an alternative housing stock option for all the renters that are out there that they're not uniform, right? Plenty of folks just want something where, you know, you can think of an investment banker that's, you know, working 20-hour days. Like, what do they need a big space for at home, right? They go home and crash. They need to shower, keep some, you know, I don't know, a beer and some ketchup in the fridge. And that's about it, right? There's nothing to it. So we're kind of able to come in from the side and deliver this stuff. And I think that there is value in most, you know, primary cities. And if we can kind of, if we see that, you know, in those transparent numbers, it's pretty easy to kind of work backwards to, you know, where there is or isn't a deal. And, you know, what's even happening today is, you know, a lot of older hotels that we're focused on, right? They just, they're certainly not covering their debt service if they're even producing a, you know, a positive NOI these days. So we're able to provide them a solution. It's kind of taking kind of two slightly fractured markets and kind of bringing them together in a unique way. And we're entrepreneurial in the sense that we're going to kind of follow where the opportunities are.
So what markets are you focused on right now, actively hunting in?
So we have in Colorado Springs, a very big hotel conversion that I wouldn't even call it a primary market that we would normally look at, but the kind of numbers made sense. And we saw that there was a not enough studio apartments were in the overall market's unit mix, and those studios were very much in demand. There was kind of wait list for them, so we said, okay, that's a fit. We wouldn't expect to see it, and it was not a target market, but we kind of fell into it. So I would say that we, you know, Texas is kind of our bread and butter. It's, you know, where we see lots of growth, and we see kind of a lot of oversupply of hotels where we can kind of make those things work. You know, we're looking at the typical, you know, top 10 list of, you know, Nashville and Phoenix and San Diego and Miami, or all of those. But we're much more, we're almost geographically agnostic, in the sense that if the multifamily market's there and the hotel is not performing, we can bridge that gap, right? And every market's going to be slightly different. So we are kind of experts in that physical, and that physical conversion of what you actually have to do on the ground and the entitlements thereon. So we can kind of take that program on the road to most places, because there is a national, frankly, an international building code, right? It varies a little.
Hey guys, this is a quick ad for our latest multifamily investment opportunity called the Avalon Apartments, located in Dallas, Texas, the fastest growing MSA in the nation. Now, rapid fire, here are the three reasons why we love this asset. Firstly, great investor returns of over 20% annualized. The second thing, of the 226 units, 30% have already been renovated and they're achieving a $250 rental premium. Now, our business plan is pretty simple. We'll come in and renovate the remaining 70% to achieve those proven rental levels, then rely on a modest 3% rent growth thereafter. It's very conservative, very straightforward, and the same thing we have been doing successfully for over a decade. Now, last thing, pricing for multifamily apartment properties have fallen more today than they did during the 2008 global financial crisis. This could very well be the best time in commercial real estate cycle to pick up cheap assets. If you're interested to find out more, click on the link below.
City. But you're generally doing, you know, 95% the same thing everywhere. And then those multifamily markets are pretty transparent. So we can kind of hop to anywhere and get good data on it. And then, you know, like anybody else, we're going through our due diligence to kind of kick the bricks and make sure that that multifamily market's going to be there at the end of the day, even if it is new to us. So I would say we don't really have target markets. We're kind of, it's a kind of a target scenario that kind of makes sense for our business plan.
One of the biggest things I know about it is, you know, in being in the business, is taking it on the road. How are you handling the construction side of it? Because obviously costs of that are going up as well. And maybe talk a little bit about the types of hotels, why you do the extended stays. And I know the answer, but for the listeners, why you choose those over, say, another hotel. And then the third question that is, you know, supply of your own deals. Like, are you in with a hotel provider that, hey, we've got six others over here that are distressed, like go over, look at that. And so you've done one, mm-hmm. and, you know, we'll buy more from you direct.
During COVID, at the very least, extended stays went the opposite direction of hotels. They were actually sold for premiums, because those that lost their jobs paid, you know, cash, money orders, you know, day to day. And lots of multifamily guys said, hey, I can buy this extended stay and convert it to multifamily very easily, right? And I would tend to agree, it's generally much more of a renovation. You have all the nuts and bolts, you know, in the walls for the systems that you need to get to over to multifamily. And that's why a lot of people get into extended stay conversions to multifamily at the very least first, which is something we did as well, to kind of understand at the very least the entitlements. And then we've gone the other direction to distinguish ourselves from kind of call it regular multifamily developers or those that want to convert, to say, hey, we're really going to get in the walls here and do construction. And we have a construction affiliate, which is pretty typical for, you know, we're vertically integrated multifamily sponsor, right? So our construction affiliate is typically doing paint and carpet, right? Renovations, you're doing countertops and backsplash and kind of the typical value add items. Well, we've advanced our construction's skill set and know-how to open up the walls and add the infrastructure needed for multifamily from a plain old hotel, right? Which has a bathroom, but needs a kitchen, right? Just has the very basic stuff. So we have kind of worked our way through figuring out exactly what that looks like. And since we've done, it's 1,800 plus units across 9 properties, we've got very good data at this point on what it costs to convert, what all things you will need. And we've done, you know, multiple different kind of size and shape hotel boxes, if you will, where the scope of construction is slightly different for each. And we know a bit about those nuances and how to get there. So that's an important thing that I think a lot of folks, you know, jumped in let's say 2021 to go do hotel conversions. They could buy hotels on fire sale. A lot of them are stuck, right? Either from, you know, busted budgets, busted interest reserves, which is something we dealt with as well. A lot of people did, right? Which is across value added multifamily or these conversions. But we've got great insights into what it's going to take to get there and kind of how long it's going to take, which very much affects the overall cost, the carry cost, right, in your overall basis. And we've come out the other end successfully and have kind of dissected what we've done right and what we've done wrong. And I'm happy to say kind of, though our first batch of COVID conversions went way over budget, right, our latest two are coming in under budget, right? We've kind of cracked that nut to know what it takes to get there. So ultimately, we're able to really get in the walls and do it kind of soup to nuts and know that it will or won't be successful at the end of the day, right? The rents will or won't support this or that purchase price and getting there, right? Getting to the end of that. So that's how we're able to kind of take those insights and kind of, we have this feedback loop, right? To produce, hey, on the next deal, this is what we should be looking at. And we are pretty exclusively looking at, frankly, lots of full service hotels with ballrooms and commercial kitchens and whatnot. That we can take down, you know, 300 plus rooms at a time with all of that, you know, common space. And we have a very nice, fully amenitized multifamily community at the end of the day, where you're not getting the most amazing amenities inside your unit. You're getting it in the community overall. We think that's a pretty good way to kind of deliver the overall, you know, tenant's experience, even if you're not delivering, you know, the most luxurious unit itself.
Gotcha. That's very interesting. I'm sure we could pick a whole conversation about, you know, those bigger amenitized hotels. I could imagine you're spending more on those amenities, which you've then got to weigh up against the rent pops or the rent just you're going to get. Like, does it make sense to really put in a state-of-the-art, you know, 3,000 square foot gym or 4,000 square foot gym? You know, like, does it more make sense to, what are we going to do with that commercial kitchen? Well, it's just an empty space now, you know what I mean? And, you know, just don't go back there. So yeah. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of those conversations that have gone on as you look at different hotels. As we round out the end of the show, what's your sort of thesis on where we are in the market cycle, you know, interest rates and all that sort of stuff, you know, as we come here at the end of 2024?
I think that the, you know, the interest rate and fiscal tightening that has gone on has pretty much kind of weeded out the guys that kind of never really belonged there in the first place, right? We've read a lot about syndicators that have just said, hey, everybody's making money, let me just go raise other people's money. And those guys have pretty much been weeded out. And the guys that have been around for a while that intend to be in this for a while, right? They've got staying power, right? And, you know, they've come out of pocket to keep their deals afloat and such. So in that sense, I mean, I spent probably 2 years, you know, 2020, 21 and 22, kind of looking around at, you know, my partners and my employees here and saying, you know, why are those guys paying so much for this? I just don't get how they're going to make money. Well, the answer is, you know, they thought everything's going up forever. And I think those of us that have been in here long enough, know it's cyclical and you got to prepare for that downside or you quite literally lose your shirt. So I do think, I think the loosening of rates obviously coming and how quickly we'll see. I actually do think we're in for a soft landing overall. I think it's going to be kind of fits and starts. But I think the market's kind of reacting appropriately and the Fed will move. But I think most importantly is that kind of everyone is kind of in a sit and wait period to see how supply works itself out in these markets that got overbuilt and where rents will land and rents start going up. You can see kind of there are some select developers, if they're lucky enough to go get in the ground now, they're going to deliver right on time in a couple of years when the demand is there again. And that's kind of what we're looking at is, hey, can we kind of take down a few hotels today, deliver them in a year or two, kind of right on time where you kind of start feeling the pinch on that supply demand. I do kind of see that coming back in line. And a lot of that is it takes a few years for lenders to take back properties that are not performing and go through the auction and, you know, find what that market is. And it's kind of every quarter, more and more of those transactions are taking place and, you know, setting the market so that we can all kind of move on and see what's next. I do think, you know, we're no longer going to be in that, you know, 1% treasury world for the long term. Right. I think that was kind of a miss in the overall market, you know, keeping the short-term rates too low for too long. You know, we've reset now and we'll be somewhere in the middle for the long term. And so, you know, everyone's going to kind of repeat to that. But I think there's a certain amount of kind of reality check that has happened for lots of, you know, multifamily sponsors, especially in that value add space. So you can't just, you know, say I'm going to put $10,000 a door into a deal and automatically rents are going to go up and I'm going to have profits, right? Doesn't happen all the time. And you need to, at the very least, prepare for the downside, right? Yeah, you can, you know, you can hope for something nice. And I do kind of see that happening pretty actively. You're getting, you know, long-term debt put on, you know, almost stabilized properties, right? Just to say, hey, I'm going to kind of set it and forget it. And in a couple years, when rents start moving again, I'll think about a value add program, right? And just for right now, it's just, I'm sitting on it and not doing anything. And I think that's the right business plan, right? If we're looking at acquisitions in the multifamily space, we're just saying, hey, rents are not going up from here, at least a year, right? If I'm looking in Austin, Dallas, probably, and even Houston, we're just not seeing that. And we'll kind of solve to that. And if we don't, you know, if we don't win a deal, that's perfectly fine. I like to say I never lost money on a deal I didn't do. And that's kind of how we like to prepare ourselves for the ups and downs of the market.
Yeah, love it. Love it, mate. Well, look, at the end of every show, we like to dive into the top five investing tips. You ready to get into it?
Let's do it.
Question number one, what's a daily habit you practice to keep on track towards your goals?
My to-do list, right? So I'm adding, I'm subtracting, I'm prioritizing every morning, and it's on my mobile phone, and I'm doing it on the drive home and things like, I have a Tesla, it can self-drive a little bit here or there. you know, staying on the overall to-do list and prioritizing, that is a, you know, daily must.
Love it. I'm exactly the same as you, except I don't have a virtual. I've got a physical, and I have to cross it out.
Then you got to rewrite it on the next. Yeah, I got you.
It's more the act of getting it out of the head. Otherwise, you keep stressing about it. Question number two is, who's been the most influential person in your career to date?
Man, I got to go with my original real estate mentor, Professor Peter Linneman out of the Wharton School. He started the real estate department at the Wharton School. And I was working with him on his consulting business to get into the macroeconomics of real estate. And I was a teaching assistant for him in his classes. And so, you know, he even does a quarterly Walker webcast with Willie Walker. Mm-hmm. Very insightful guy, you know him personally, and kind of set me up on this path. And so kind of really, I'd say kind of took me from kind of that general entrepreneurship to commercial real estate, right? That's kind of the path for your entrepreneurship. So got to be him for sure.
Question number three is, what's the most influential tool in your business? When I say tool, it could be a physical tool like my notepad, or it could be something digital, a software that you can't run the business without. What is it?
So it's workflow software. We use Asana. Developed out of Google and Facebook. And I was actually one of the, you know, first, I don't know, 100,000 users, I don't know, 15 years ago, just kind of, I got wind of it for, you know, my own entrepreneurial things, but it's become kind of a pretty essential tool where our spread out teams, you know, construction, property management, leasing, and everything across the country are all synced, right? And not only that, but you can kind of retain and reuse the notes from your prior deals, right? Which is something that we have used to be successful on our most recent hotel conversions where we missed the boat on earlier ones. So having that kind of cloud-based software that follows you around wherever you go and carries those notes of knowledge that you build up over time, then you have your checklists in there. I think kind of multiple different workflow softwares, you know, could be good. We have, you know, our own that we like, but having that kind of distributed yet centralized system, I think kind of, you know, allows you to gain the knowledge and then utilize it over time.
Second to last question, in one sentence, what's been the biggest failure in your career? What'd you learn from that failure?
So I actually quit my very good associate job in New York City real estate to do a startup on my own, which was effectively, you could think of kind of Argus DCF commercial real estate underwriting, but cloud-based. And yep. You know, I think it kind of still to this day is not quite there. I've seen multiple offerings out there, and I learned a lot about kind of myself and, you know, where my entrepreneurial skills lie and do not lie. and kind of what the pain points were and were not, what I thought they were, and kind of that product market fit, which was something that kind of, as an analyst and working with Argus, it was so clunky and you know, how there's got to be a better solution. And yet, you know, when you go and do it cloud-based, it just kind of adds these other complications. And I think kind of even today, kind of people haven't quite cracked the nut, at least kind of in a pretty way. You know, you can kind of put together the numbers and Argus is still out there. But a lot of, you know, where I had kind of a consistent, you know, growth in my real estate career, right? That was just kind of a complete sidetrack, took a chance and kind of had to start over again thereafter to kind of get my feet back. And it, you know, coincided with moving to Texas and kind of starting in the multifamily world. And so, you know, learned a lot from that experience about, you know, kind of what people are looking for and kind of making sure that you are producing what the market needs. And so, you know, that kind of landed me back into, hey, you know, people are still buying real estate and need help, you know, analyzing that stuff. And that was, it's always been my strong suit. So just kind of advanced in doing that in an interesting way, I think, these days.
That's awesome. I had the exact same thing, what I call it, Deal Analytica. And I tried to have the somewhere between cloud, but also having, you know, offshore underwriters for a fraction of the cost is mm-hmm. where I ended up. And we've got a group out of India now that helps us. And I didn't create a product out of it, but I did pitch it at one conference, you know, back in 2017. It was the same sort of thing. How do you create less clunky underwriting? Mm-hmm. But that's where you start when you're an entrepreneur. Like, who can help, can underwrite deals? Who can underwrite 5 deals a week when I'm a solo entrepreneur? Because I can't do it. I need to focus on other things. So love it. Last question is, where can people reach you to continue the conversation that'll be in your sphere? Where do they go?
So shearcapital.com is a great way. It's got, you know, resources about kind of what we do, examples of hotel conversions that we have done. And you know, there's contact information. Listen, I'm at egordon@shearcapital. I'm pretty responsive. I'm, you know, in email all day. And you know, listen, we want to talk to other entrepreneurs that are in the space. We want to talk to, you know, hotel owners that might need a way out. And we're already, you know, fielding those incoming calls from finally private equity has kind of shown up and said, hey, I'm ready to invest in this business, where they've kind of said no for a few years. So we're getting those inquiries as well. But I think we've really kind of carved out a unique skill set in what we do. And so we're kind of now more recently kind of taking that on the road to even just kind of, if other people want to go do a conversion, we don't have to do it right, but we can kind of give you those shortcuts on how to get there and how to do it right, where you're not overspending and, you know, building the Taj Mahal where you're just going to get affordable rents at the end of the day. So, you know, making sure that the kind of the actual business plan fits the market, which is, you know, something I learned from my entrepreneurial stint going out on my own, right? Make sure you fit properly.
Love it. Love it, mate. Well, I want to thank you so much for jumping on today's show. I want to just reflect some of the things that I took away from today's show. I think it's, you know, your ability to identify opportunities in markets as they're shifting in real time and having, you know, the balls, I guess, to go out and in 2016 start doing hotel conversions where every man and their dog was still buying value-add multifamily and arguably was at a really good basis probably in 2016 compared to where it got to. But then just identifying the writing on the wall early on that there is another way to provide affordable housing in certain markets, and making sure you're picking the right, putting the right square in the round hole, if that makes sense. Because there are a lot of hotels out there that, you know, wouldn't suit certain markets. And you, when you spoke about Houston, understanding what they need, what does that market need versus an Austin or a Nashville, and then being, you know, gutsy enough to go out and say, well, I'm not just going to buy the hotel with the plumbing in the wall. I'm going to go learn how to do it. And what does that mean with my utilities? What does that mean with costs? And then taking that on the road. I think that's, you know, just a life cycle of hearing that evolve over time is freaking awesome. So did I leave anything out there in that little summary?
No. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Well, mate, thank you so much for jumping on today's show. Enjoy the rest of your week and we'll catch up very, very soon.
All right. Thanks so much.
Well, there you have another cracking episode jam-packed with some incredible stuff from Elon. If you do want to check him out, make sure you go over to shearcapital.com. That's shircapital.com, or hit him up at ejordan@shearcapital.com. I want to thank you all again for taking some time out of your day to tune in to listen to the show, because increase your financial IQ. If you do like this show, share it with someone you know. Get them to give him a 5-star review, because that's how we grow this show, to continue to bring this to you each and every week. We're going to do this all again next week. So remember, be bold, be brave, and go give life a crack.